so I wanted a snack. And
sure, as one does.
There's this place.
I want a snack.
Yeah, it's called Julia's Banana Bread.
Julia's Banana Bread, okay.
Yeah, which is a like roadside stand.
I love it.
On the like north side of the island, sure. Or Maui. Uh-huh. And to get there, there's literally like one road that goes around like that part of Maui. And if you go, and we're staying like southwest of the island.
Because that's where all the good weather is.
Right.
Yeah.
So to get there, you can either go like up around like the east to the north,
sure.
Or you can take the road like
to the west and the south.
West and the north.
Oh, west and north.
So you're trying to get to the same spot on the top, right?
Okay.
And so we went the west and north. Uh-huh. Nope, east and north. And it's
this is great.
This is you can really use this material.
One thing people love is just directions.
Anyway, banana bread.
Banana bread.
Very
you're
bread.
Caught in a fire. Get to the
banana bread's important.
No, it's not that important. I've heard the story. It's not that important.
Elise is burying the lead here. Elise, you were caught in a firestorm.
Yes.
The island is on fire, and we've got to go on how the directions to get banana bread. welcome back to Beyond Sunday.
I want Elise to tell us more stories.
I know. We're exploring. I got to take our faith Beyond Sunday morning. We'll get to Elise's story. This is Patrick Nazar. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
And excellent. Not on fire.
Not
that's
on fire.
Right.
Not on
currently
fire.
Smoldering.
Because she went south by southwest 50 paces to the...
I don't know where I went. I just know I didn't get any banana bread.
Oh, you still didn't get any banana
no,
bread?
No, it was close.
Oh, man. That's unfortunate.
Storm.
Tragic.
Welcome to 2021. I know we had a podcast come out already, but this is our first time in the studio in 2021.
Seeing each
We're
other
back.
In the New Year.
Yes.
Right.
So welcome back. How was everybody's Christmas, New Year's?
It was as good as my pre-Christmas self thought it was going to be.
Okay.
That
so
is,
that
sure
is...
like a really low bar or like a really high bar?
It is what it was.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Now, off. You were off for a week.
I was off for two weeks.
And kind of not much. And Elise went to Hawaii.
I did, yeah. Yes.
And there was a fire.
And there was a firestorm.
And there was no banana bread.
No banana bread. We got stranded. The fire crossed the road like 100 yards in front of us, and we felt like we almost died. And we were stuck in the car for 12 hours on the wrong side of the island with no food or water or power or anything.
That
was fun.
That is scary.
Real vacay. Yeah.
Yes.
The rest was great.
Oh.
Yeah.
Outside of the fire, yeah.
Outside of the fire. And the... not getting the banana bread.
Right.
Sure.
That was... You didn't like try again the next day?
No. So we did. We had gotten it earlier on in the week.
Okay.
So this was real good.
This was a return to the banana bread. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was some banana bread to be had.
So when you, let me ask you this, you know, before we move on here. When you left for banana bread, was the island on fire?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay. So this wasn't like, hey, the island's on fire, but, you know, that banana bread's pretty good.
Right. It was real windy.
Okay.
And stormy. I should have known. It was a thing called a surge, apparently.
I don't know that you, as a guest on the island, should have known.
Well, when you're told this is a surge,
yeah.
Thinking, but what about that banana bread? It's probably not.
Like, too windy to be at the beach type situation.
Oh, okay.
It's a surge of the trade winds. Cool. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, we have thunderstorms all the time in Houston.
Yeah, sure. We have hurricanes.
Right.
What could possibly happen?
Yeah, there's surges.
The island could catch on fire. That's what could happen.
Well, like, it blew down, like, massive trees. It ripped roofs off of houses. Oh. Like.
So this is like a mini hurricane thing, but like really fast.
And lit half the island on fire.
Cool.
So.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's one thing, you know, we can, here in Houston, our hurricanes don't bring fire with it, usually, so.
Yeah, just,
you know,
but
you can't imagine, if you, like, lived a couple hundred years ago on one of those islands, and one of those things blew through, you'd be like, yeah, we made some fire god real angry.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. What do we gotta do?
That would make sense. Yeah. I would be down with that logic, yeah.
Yeah, totally understandable. I mean, I'm sure they'd throw somebody in the volcano and
throw, like, loaves of banana bread into the blaze.
Make more banana bread.
Yeah.
It's our purest, most important export.
Yeah.
So welcome back. New year, new me. Did you make a resolution?
You look pretty much the same to me.
No, pretty much.
Okay.
No, you look great. You look slim and trim and happy in the new year.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. So
I thought you looked slim and trim the last year. I don't know what
he
was trying to imply here.
He did look slim and trim last year, but we, you know.
Yes, my resolution. I do want to.
You say those things.
That got awkward. I don't know.
Yeah, my resolution. I want to you know, do a little more physical fitness and play more pickleball in the new year.
Play more pickleball.
It is that is. I definitely want to play.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
If you're unfamiliar, pickleball is like ping pong and tennis had a baby. So.
I'm just envisioning that child.
That's
There you go. Yeah. You can decide who is the mother, who is the father in that situation. Yeah.
Who had the recessive genes and that's
not Sure. Yeah, but it's like on a small tennis court, wooden paddle, and it's pretty fun.
There you go.
If any listeners ever want to play, I'm always
pickleball.
Down. It's sweeping the nation. Our tennis courts here have pickleball lines.
Sweeping the greater Woodlands area.
Yes.
It is. I think pickleball is like a it's big in the Houston area for sure. I don't know how like broad it goes, but like my aunt and uncle who have lived in Houston for years have played pickleball for a long time.
I played in college.
And they're like both in their 70s, 80s. So I'm not saying that it's an like old person game. But.
I am an old person, so it's fine. Yes. Me, I'll do some shuffleboarding. I'll go walk around the mall. You know, so all the classics here. So any other resolutions you guys made?
You know, I'm not big on resolutions. I just try to, you know, be a better version of myself every day. That's
how's that going for you?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I try not to make like really intense resolutions, you know, because why? You're not going to keep them anyway. But
there's confidence for you.
I worked out every day from February on this past year, and so I want to continue that. This year, and also I want to finish novel number 3 in the next few months. So
okay,
that's kind of the goals, I guess.
So Patrick and I were talking about this earlier. What do you define as working out? Like, what's a workout for you?
I mostly lift weights. I do heavy weightlifting stuff.
Okay.
So, but that's because I can do it in my garage, and that was a big deal with coronavirus shutdown.
So like 30 minutes of activity kind of thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I say. 30 minutes is kind of the barometer.
Are you doing like Olympic lifts, or are you just like out there with?
I do deadlifts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to our news article.
All right, let's do it. Yes. New year, new news.
New year, new year news. It's winter time.
It's hard to say.
Spoiler alert. Here in Houston, this is not a problem. Let me ask you, in Ohio, did you ever get icicles on the roof of your house?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And then you'd want to stand right underneath them and your parents would tell you, like, don't stand underneath it. It's going to poke your eye out, right? I mean, that was,
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
Now,
don't stand underneath
it. You got them in South Carolina, too. Now, have you ever broken off an icicle, you know,
absolutely.
As a treat?
Mm-hmm.
I've never tried to lick the icicle, but I have broken it off and, like, sword-fighted with it. Okay. Sword-fought.
But you've never used the icicle as, like, a little popsicle or a treat?
Obviously, that's the use of the icicle.
Yeah, it's pre-made for you.
Right.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, a meteorologist and a viral TikTok has explained you should not be doing that.
Because the viral TikTok has viruses in it, probably?
Mm. Oh, no, maybe.
Probably the icicle.
So it says the water from the icicle lands on the roof of your house, flows down.
Gross.
And forms icicles.
Also gross.
Guess what else is on the roof of your house?
Bird poop.
Yes.
Nailed it. Yep. Everything nasty that's in the air.
Yeah,
so when you are licking your icicle, it contains bird poop. A lot of it is what she said.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you were licking this popsicle here, let me ask you, Lisa, did it have flavor? You know, was it water flavored?
It
tastes like a spring robin.
Right. The ones, I'm not going to say I've never pulled one off of my roof, but the ones I remember from like trees and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's no bird poop
better.
On those.
Yeah, now that I say it.
Birds live in trees.
Squirrels and raccoons.
Right. Well, you think birds are like, you know what? I live up here. I don't like to poop where I live, where I nest. Yeah. So.
I'm going to go poop on that house.
Right.
I'm going to poop on this
right.
This is my home. I'm not an animal. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's really good advice, you know, for any of our listeners. Here in Houston, I'm going to say.
Have a lot of icicles.
But maybe you're traveling, you see an icicle, and you're like,
don't
you know
be
what?
Walk away.
Give me some of that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Icicle just pouring from this.
Spend the 79 cents, walk into the grocery store, and buy the, or, you know, do your order online and do a drive-by pickup and get a popsicle. That's the way to
it's
do
just
it.
It's just not the same, though.
I'm not saying it's the same, but it won't give you bird diseases.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, at the beginning of the Christmas season, you can go up on the roof of your house, give it a good scrub.
Sure.
Maybe add some, like.
Bleach it.
Yeah, maybe add some like powder, like cherry or grape powder, so the water comes down.
Yeah.
You can
you
form
the,
for you. I think this is pretty good here. You can do this. Yeah,
I think you've got a niche on the market here. I think you can dig a hole and you can bury yourself in that, and it'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, here in Houston, I don't know if that's going to make much money for me, except like...
Oh, you have to export.
Okay, no. So I got to go somewhere else and bring it in. Yeah,
probably like Norway or something like that would be the first place to go, because they've got icicles for like 10 months a year.
Yeah. That's true. I guess with all those icicles, though, how many birds do they have?
Also, they would be cleaner. There would be less that you need to do to clean your roof.
That's what I would imagine.
Might just have like birds that are cool.
I feel like Norway still has birds. I'm not the expert, but seems like they probably do.
Maybe we went all the way to Antarctica. Right. You know, there's penguins there, but they're flightless.
That's the other direction.
So. Right. They can't get on the roof. I mean.
Sure. There you go. Or you put up like a flypaper strip for like the penguins to get caught in. You know, so like
I don't want to catch a penguin. That'd be sad.
You can let it go. Oh, I mean, I'm not saying
that. Okay.
You don't have to kill it and eat it.
But it's caught in the flypaper. It's going to, you know, die of starvation and whatnot.
Bring it down.
You monitor your strips here. Come on. This is amateur work.
I don't want to hurt the penguin.
Yeah.
All right, so that's good advice for our first news story of 2021. Well, I guess
don't
we already know. Our first live one, but whatever. All right, we have another thing that happened recently here.
There have been lots of things that have been happening.
Yeah, well,
there's one other thing that we're going to talk about here.
There's nothing we're going to talk about. Lots of things are happening.
I mean, as for recording, and you know, we're reading election results, all sorts of stuff is happening. As
yes.
Lots of things are going on in the world today.
Yeah.
Yes, but so in the new year, Congress has come back into session.
They're back again.
Yes.
Look out. Look out, 2021. Here comes
I'm
Congress.
Scared.
Yes, and in the Congress here, Representative Emmanuel Cleaver gave a prayer.
It's an interesting last name, Cleaver.
Yes, he's also a United Methodist minister and former mayor of Kansas City.
So he's from the Kansas City area?
From Missouri.
Missouri.
That side.
The Missouri side of Kansas City.
Yes. All right. Well, he said a prayer, and he ended his prayer with, Amen and a woman.
I am an expert. Okay, so I'm an expert in prayers.
Okay.
Expert in prayers.
I am an expert in prayers.
Professional prayer.
I am trained.
Have you done 10,000 hours of prayers in your life?
Probably.
You know, that's usually what I think of.
Do you have a license to pray?
I have a license to be a pastor, which I feel like covers me, right? Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and declare myself an expert on this one. I'm pretty sure that a woman is not how we're supposed to end a prayer. Like, there are a lot of ways you can end a prayer, but I'm pretty sure a woman is not one of them. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. To be clear here, amen does not refer to a group of gendered individuals who are men.
Yeah. I mean, it's Hebrew.
Yeah.
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 I mean, he was definitely trying to like make it seem as though it does, though, which is incorrect. But also, women still ends in men. Like, you haven't done anything with that. Mm. You still got in on the end.
So, like, a girl next time?
Right,
would that be better? Amen and a girl?
Like, literally, I could care less. Like, it's completely meaningless.
Yeah. I'm assuming that it was made in... I didn't read about this. I'm assuming it was made in jest.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, according to him, and this is... He got a lot of negative press about this. And I think from many sides of the aisle of... according to him, it was supposed to be upon, you know, to highlight and celebrate the record number of women elected to National Congress this last year. I think there's 144. Mm-hmm. The previous record was 129. So that's great. Like, this is really, these are good things.
Smashing records.
Highlighting those things is probably really, really good.
Right.
I'm not sure, I will disagree with Mr. Cleaver, Representative Cleaver. This is not the way to do that.
So right, just recognize and highlight it.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, in a prayer...
Yeah.
You could have said, Dear Lord, we thank you
for
the record. Probably shouldn't say it like that. We thank you for the record number of women who were elected into serve in this Congress.
Yeah.
May you, you know, guide them, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know that making something into a pun is the way to highlight its importance.
Nah.
Like, if you want to highlight something's importance, the pun does not seem like the right strategy.
No.
Yeah. Also, just a dumb pun. Like, if you're going to make a pun, at least make it good.
Right.
Sure.
You're wasting your puns on junk.
Yeah. I think also...
embarrassing to puns everywhere.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for political purposes, it's pretty foolish. I mean, just the idea of, like, I think there's already kind of a stigma attached to the Democratic Party that they are not... not supportive of religious rights or connected to the religious community.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, this man
is
a United Methodist minister, so I mean, I'm not going to criticize his religious beliefs, but I think this is just adding kind of fuel to that fire, whether that's true or not. That is the perception of many on the religious right.
Mm-hmm,
and so just, this is like tossing, you know, raw meat to tigers over there. Right. I think they're just latching onto this. And I think if you're going to stretch, you know, your religious convictions, doing that in very real, tangible ways, I think is more valuable than just throwing this a woman at the end of a prayer. Yeah. I don't think that does anything. Like, you as a woman, Elise, you're not like, finally.
Right, like, thank God, somebody
The glass ceiling of prayer endings has been
shattered. Woo, I'm flying without wings. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, like, I know the term is pundit, but we didn't mean that.
Pundit, yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah, yeah.
She made a little pun of her own, yeah. Folks.
Especially,
was it better than a woman?
It was at least less offensive.
I think so. Yes. Yeah, especially since, like, amen has nothing to do with men. It just is, like, sounds in Hebrew to Greek similar to what we...
To English, In a Hebrew word sounds similar to an English word.
Yeah, it's not like now we're going to say, like, okay, do you want some womenthal cigarettes, you know?
Right.
Are you on your womenstrual cycle?
Yikes. Yikes.
Which makes more sense, really. So,
how long have you been sitting on that one?
You know, a couple. You know.
I'm a little offended he's not going to get in trouble for that one.
I said yikes.
Yeah.
All right, but so I do think that, at least you kind of mentioned this before the podcast, we're going to talk about this. This is kind of like a little bit of like slacktivism.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like throwing a sticker out there and being like, on your car and being like, now I'm an activist.
Right.
Or I made a Facebook post, now I'm engaged with this process of recognizing women. It's so small and so dumb in many ways to say, like, this is supposed to be this recognition of women. It's not that. And by calling it that, it kind of diminishes all the ways that women should be and are recognized in our world.
Yeah.
Like, by saying, like, here, ladies, we threw you a bone.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I would argue, like, this is actually counterproductive, too, because it's so dumb. Like, and the people who are going to take issue with, you know, more women in Congress or whatever, anyway, are going to be all over that. Like, and it just point to that as, like, an example of, this is what the feminists want, you know? We have to say a women now. Like, I don't know. I don't love it.
Yeah, I'm 100% for you. And I think we, as a podcast, we've talked about, like, women in ministry and in leadership before. And this was, I think, before you joined us, Elise. But, you know, we in the ELCA, and I think personally, want to highlight female leaders and the role of women in society should be increased. Like, we believe that. And so this, I agree with you. One, does not do that. Mm-mm. And two, can hinder that, not only religiously, but also socially. And so I hope, you know, I did read some comments here that I'm not going to get into from Representative Cleaver, where he kind of came back against the fallout from this and was not really like, hey, my bad, you know, like,
like
he kind of came back against it. And he was acknowledging, like, I'm sad my pun was taken
poorly. Sorry you took that way.
Yeah. But
didn't we just talk about the non-apology apology?
Yeah, yeah. With Jonah. Yeah.
But I do think he should have definitely been like, I get it. Like, this was not really...
Not my finest moment.
Not my finest moment. Yeah. I did want to highlight women. I could have done a better job of that.
Yeah.
You know, and that this was not the proper way to do that.
Yeah.
And I think, from both an advocate for women's rights and a... Not maybe I'm not quite the expert that Pastor David is. Maybe I'd be more of like the, you know, what is it? The protege of prayer.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. You can be my prayer protege.
The squire of prayer.
Oh, yeah. Prayer.
I need you to run around behind me and clean up all my prayer messes. That's
sure. Right. Prayer this, Padawan.
Yes, and that's fine. From a religious perspective, is also kind of offensive. Right. You know, like, you know, if you're twisting religious sentiment for a pun at this level, I just don't think it's pretty silly.
So, you know, I recently sent in some of my best puns because there's this, like, big contest.
And
and so I sent in some puns to this contest, and I was expecting to hear back. And then I finally, like, I just wasn't hearing anything, hear anything. So I finally, like, called up. I was like, hey, like, when are we going to hear, like, you know, what the finals are or whatever? Like, when are we going to hear? And the guy's like, I'm sorry, we were just inundated with responses, and so we haven't been able to call back everybody. In fact, not one pun intended. Yeah.
I figured that was the setup. Yeah.
We all knew that was coming. Yes.
After a second. You said you called. I said, mm-mm.
No. No, he did not.
You're sending in puns to a contest. I was like, that isn't done. Yeah.
Elise was with me when I was just sending in puns to a contest. She was on board for that.
I might have submitted some things somewhere before. I did not call, though.
Oh, you didn't call to follow up?
Yeah. Right. That's who does that?
Somebody who wants to make a good pun. That's who.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our main story this evening. Mm. I don't know. I don't have a pun to get there, you know, or even a bad one. So.
Right, yeah. Good, bad.
All right, these are from our friends at PRRI.
Oh, they're back again.
Back again. They're a research company. I have no idea what PRRI stands for. So.
Oh, I looked this up. It's the something religious institute. It's the
first P and R are not
public,
important.
Public.
Puritan.
No, not Puritan.
Radical.
Puritanical, that's not it. Our friends.
Yes. I'll find it.
Those radical Puritans, right. Yes. All right. Religious Institute, they have coming back with greater impact on coronavirus impact on religious life, a study.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to get into some of this and maybe expand from this. A lot of this is kind of like, what do...
Public Religion Research Institute.
Okay, public religion research is great. Mm-hmm. There, a lot of this is going to get into, like, what do evangelicals think about mask usage and worship? What do Catholics think about that? And we don't care about that. Or at least we don't care about that as a podcast a little bit. But we are going to talk about some of this. I'll dive into the research, and then we'll go from there. Kind of like with light of coronavirus, mm-hmm. which is now almost...
Almost a year in.
Yeah, we're about nine months in. We have carried this to term, and now it is time to...
Yikes. Yes. Please don't extend that metaphor.
You don't want that? Okay, fine. But here we are, and it's no sign of going anywhere anytime soon. Even with the vaccine, mm-hmm. it seems like there's holdups. Mm-hmm. Seems like if you're not a frontline worker or at risk, it might be 8 or 9 months before you get this vaccine at this mm-hmm. point. You know, that's just the reality of the situation. So... So what does this mean? We're going to kind of expand on this. What does this mean for the church, near future, mm-hmm, far mm-hmm, future? Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this. So first, feelings of connection with religious community during the pandemic. All right, so what do we think here? This idea that are people feeling connected spiritually for the last 9 months now?
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I hear a lot of people mm-hmm. who are not. Yeah. Who are feeling very disconnected from their communities. And part of this is generational. I don't mean this as a slight, but part of this is, you know, I think that people who are more comfortable with technology, which tend to be younger generations, have mm-hmm. had an easier time maintaining a sense of connection.
Yeah.
You know, if you're already comfortable with Zoom, with Facebook, with live videos, with that sort of thing, you know, if you already exist through the world of TikTok prior to this, mm-hmm. you know, you're kind of ready to step into this new way of connecting. And for a lot of people who are older, who are tragically also more harshly affected by coronavirus, it's a very isolating time because, you know, you struggle to even have someone come in to show you how to do this stuff. And so you don't want to put yourself or someone else at risk to have someone in come in and then you come into your home and teach you how to do this. And so you just don't do it. And so then you're not getting connected. And, you know, maybe you're getting a phone call or maybe somebody's stopping by your house, but that's really just not mm-hmm. not the same. So I think people are, in a lot of places, I think people are feeling more disconnected because they can't always go to that same physical space mm-hmm. that they've been able to connect with. And for so many people, right, the physical space is central to that connection. As much as we say the church isn't a building, and I do think people believe that, it's still a physical space that's very meaningful mm-hmm. as a connection point for people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, anecdotally for me, too, it's been a mixed bag. You know, there was a shift there where it sort of became more about like a community from church versus going to church. Because mm-hmm. We haven't, this will be the first Sunday that we've been at church since we shut down. Mm-hmm. Just for us personally. So, you know, I haven't, aside from, you know, recording or whatever, I haven't been here at church for 9 months, I guess.
So, and there are plenty of people in that boat.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my parents were living with us for a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was a lot of desire to not expose them to stuff. So, you know, that aspect of connection, I'd say I feel like more disconnected from the church, the experience of going to church. I'm way more connected to like my group of friends from church and my mm-hmm. community from church mm-hmm. though. Cause mm-hmm. I think we all kind of just leaned on each other to an extent, you know?
Sure.
So that has been actually kind of nice, in a weird way, but yeah, I don't know. I want to say too, like in the beginning of coronavirus, there was sort of like a spiritual shift where I think everybody was looking for something that was comforting, mm-hmm, right? Like, mm-hmm, we don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Stuff feels like it's spiraling out of control. Like, what are we going to go to? And I mean, I think for me as well, that was, you know, like a very like heavy spiritual time and kind of like leaned into, you know, my beliefs and my faith. But then we kind of got complacent. And I think that's the thing I want to watch out for is like, we've settled into this place of like, okay, we're used to not like going to church, you know, we're used to not gathering as a faith community, that kind of thing. I've become complacent with that. I don't want that to be the case going forward.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I want it to be a thing that I get back to eventually in some form.
Yeah. There's a lot in there that I'm going to take some time to respond to on this podcast. Cause I definitely hear that when we get to kind of this, like, what does this mean for the future? Cause I think you're laying out a groundwork, not only for the present, but also what is that going to look like? You know, personally, I think, it's hard to stay connected. I think I work with teenagers across the board. The data is saying, like, even our teenagers, the most adept at sustaining relationship through smart devices,
they're struggling.
Are struggling. Mm-hmm. And I think that the hope, you know, for this generation Z or whatever, you know, you want to call this next generation, some of the hope is like they're realizing that a smart device connectedness cannot really fulfill you. Right. Like that is not how you're meant to live your life. Like you may be watching pictures of each other on Instagram. You may be sharing Snapchat, you know, hours at a time with one another, and they're still feeling disconnected. I think, you know, the hope is saying like, that's because that is not meant to replace real connectedness.
Yeah.
It can be part of connection, and I think that there's value in kind of an online community and online stuff, but it can't fully get in there and replace all that. So I think that even though they may be most adept at handling that world, I think they maybe can experience, and maybe they have less life experience to draw to know how to best navigate. Even if they know how to use the smartphone, but I don't know if they have the life experience to say like, and I can use this the best possible way.
Yeah,
that's reasonable.
So nearly half, about 47% of Americans who attend religious services at least a few times a year say they feel less connected to their religious congregation since the beginning of the coronavirus. So that's probably across the board, we're saying like half of a church is saying, you know, I just feel less connected. And these are people who are going to church a few times a year. So these might even be people in the building at their respective religious organizations saying, I just don't feel as connected. And there's probably a variety of reasons for that. I mean, that you may be seeing people across the thing, but you're not having coffee together. You're not doing Bible study together. You're not having the same kind of touch points on each other's lives that we were used to.
Yep.
All right. So another one here that I think is good for us to look at. So some beliefs about the pandemic. So belief that God will protect the faithful.
There is zero scriptural evidence. That's not true. There's not zero. There is limited scriptural evidence to suggest that God protects the faithful from
pestilence.
Yeah. You've got the story of the Exodus, but you've also got the story of Revelation.
Sure.
And the story of Revelation, everybody's in it together. Faithful, unfaithful alike. You're all in it together. And it's very clear that even if you're faithful to Jesus, you're still on the earth as all this suffering stuff is happening.
Yeah. But what do you think people believe about this, though?
Oh, I think people absolutely believe that God's going to protect the faithful.
Yeah. So
I'm going to say over 60% of the evangelical community thinks that God is going to protect the faithful. And I'm going to say around 40% of the Protestant community.
I'll give you the sentence so you can give me your statistics. So God,
I already gave you my sentence.
I'm giving you what they asked, and you can tell me. Because
you're the professional.
This is their
prayer, not...
agree or disagree?
Agree.
I'm not asking you to agree. This is the thing. God always rewards those who have faith with good health and will protect them from being infected by the coronavirus. So this is
good Lord. That's a loaded statement. Okay. Yeah. So do you agree or disagree? And I'm assuming there's a strongly agree category and a strongly disagree category.
But I don't have all the data here.
Also, do you just want his opinion? Because I wasn't paying attention.
I'll take your opinion as well.
Okay. So can you read it
again? God always rewards those who have faith with good health and will protect them from being infected by the coronavirus.
Disagree.
Okay, I know you disagree. We're saying, what do you think?
All right, what's our breakdown? Who's our first category that we're guessing?
We're just saying, What in America?
Oh, in America, what percentage of religious people in America agree or disagree with that statement?
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna say over 65% agree with that statement.
All right, Elise.
That feels about right.
Okay, yeah. It's actually much lower. It's about 1 in 4.
Really? Oh, I'm proud of people. Yeah. Good work, America. Good.
I'm gonna say this is so blatant here. They might agree That's with true. Parts of this right. statement, but this idea of like God always rewards those and will protect you from coronavirus. I think that. You're pitting Americans in a religious Americans, you know, not quite. In
the I don't same. Always have the best view of my American sure. brethren. So.
Yeah,
I've been hurt before.
I've been let down so many times.
So I mean, but I think this is an interesting question. Even 25% of Christians or religious in America saying like always rewards you with good health and will protect you with the coronavirus based on your faith. That's a high number.
Yeah. I mean, if we have, if we had 100 people in worship, that's 25 people who are sitting in our building who think, oh, I don't have to worry about coronavirus because God's going to protect me.
Mm. Yes. That's astonishing. That is dramatically high. So what do we think about this? So you've already kind of said nowhere in the Bible or not a strong
I retracted and said, limited.
Yeah, I think if you take the Bible as a whole, you could definitely go into Scripture and cherry pick a few verses and come on to this conclusion. Mm-hmm. But I think if you read Scripture as a whole, which we've been trying to do on the podcast I think it's tough to walk away being like, yeah, the faithful are always taken care of.
Especially the always, right? I mean, because even if you look at the Israelites, in this instance, they were protected and brought out of Egypt. But then look at all the other times that real bad stuff happened to the Israelites. This is not an always.
Sure. And, you know, Jesus, fully God, fully man. There's no one more faithful than Jesus.
And
brutally alert. Tortured and murdered by the hands of the state. You can say, like, God was always there to take care of them. And all his disciples share the same fate. Or, you know, 10 out of 12 share the same fate.
Not great odds there.
Well, 10 out of 12 and the other one dies by his own hand. So, really 11 out of 12 have
faith. And the other one lives in isolation on an island. So,
so who's the winner
but
here?
Lives. I don't know.
For a time. Yeah, so what do you think is the driving factor, though, of this belief?
Bad preaching.
Okay.
I mean, it's probably...
It's prosperity gospel.
I want to say it's arrogance at the end of the day, right? It's this idea that you can affect the outcome at all by making what you deem to be good choices and doing what you're quote-unquote supposed to do.
I mean, it's an extension of if you do the right thing, God's going to bless you with all the health, wealth, and money that you ever wanted, right? Yeah. I mean... Just, live a good life and God's going to give you everything. And, I'm sorry, I kind of slipped into my Southern Joel Osteen-ish thing there. But, it's an extension of that, right? If I believe that God's going to give me everything I want just because I, did this thing, then, why wouldn't God protect me from coronavirus, too? Of course, God.
Yeah.
It's also, it's a level of arrogance to say, like, keeping me healthy is the best thing that God can do for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Which like completely negates this idea of, hey, when we die, we get to be with God. That's like so much better than anything that we think we're going to experience here. Not that I want to like go die, but at the same time, like we have to stop thinking that life in this world is the best reward that we can have. It's not the best reward that we can have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it ultimately, it's a false realization that when people latch onto these beliefs, they're not actually latching onto any aspects of Christianity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, these are very, like, pagan beliefs that they had about the gods.
Yeah, that makes me giggle.
You know, that they're kind of clinging to. So, like, you're not, like, having this idea of, like, God protects you because you're faithful, that's what, tribes believed thousands of years ago about their gods. You know, that the storm hit... Who sinned, basically? What do we need to do? Or what do we need to do?
How much banana bread do we need to throw
to prove our faith? What do we need to do? What lengths do we need to do to prove our faith in these matters? So it's not Christian on any level, I think, to latch onto this, especially a Christian understanding of grace, where God is loving me in spite of my sins.
Yeah.
Not God loves me because I deserve it even a little bit more than my neighbor. I mean,
I do, but that's not why God loves me.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's that we've kind of, in America, kind of mixed up a lot of these Christians and Christianese together and kind of created a new monster out of that. And I think that this is kind of evidence that this is happening here. And coronavirus brings this to the surface. You know, that that if it wasn't coronavirus, there was something else that these group of Christians who go to church, who maybe read their Bible, who understand, who are listening to religious music or things like that, can kind of come away of like, God should be protecting me because I'm faithful or because I deserve it.
It's almost like a superstition at the end of the day. Like, I know superstitions are really big, like in where I grew up in South Carolina. It's like a big thing. It's interesting to step back and see how that's sort of like mixed in with, you know, American faith.
Yeah, and then it kind of takes away this idea of like, well, what happens if you're in that community that believes this and somebody gets coronavirus?
Right.
You know, like, does it...
Then they weren't faithful.
They're the biggest sinner ever.
Or or does it lead to this idea of like, I can only understand or empathize when it happens to me?
Right.
You know, like, then, okay, we guys should take coronavirus more seriously or mass mandates work or these things. Only when it happens to me or my people does it matter.
We hear that all the time with stuff, even outside of coronavirus. Like, you hear dudes all the time say, like, I feel bad about my past behavior because I have a daughter now. Like, I don't feel good about the way I treat a woman because now I have a daughter. It affects me. You
yeah,
because
like I don't want her treated the way I treat it.
Right, yeah. So, that's, I don't know.
A little too late,
Yeah, so let's think about now a little bit of like, okay, what does this mean for us going forward? You know, since I think early on, we as a church community and maybe we as a world believed, hey, 2 months tops.
Yeah, we're good. When we started, this was 2 weeks, right? This was
like 2 week quarantine.
We shut down for 2 weeks and we'll get it under control and we'll be fine. And that was what we first heard. And it just kept getting.
Longer. Sure.
Well, here we are.
Yeah.
I mean, in March, we're like, well, we'll definitely be back by Easter.
Yeah.
Right. And then Easter came and went, and like, well, we'll definitely be in for vacation Bible school and mission trips and things this summer. And then those came and went, and they're like, well, we'll definitely be there for Christmas, right? And then here we are. And so I think saying right now, like, oh, well, this summer we'll definitely be back to relative normal, or even next Christmas, we can say at this point, like, there's not a lot of evidence that we can really latch on to say like that's going to happen. And I think the other part, and I think Elise, you were kind of alluding to this, is like, well, what happens when that time does come and we are able to walk into church freely the same way we did, you know, last year at this time, who's going to be there? Do we really expect 100% of the people we had last March are going to be there when that time happens? And realistically, we could say probably not. That these patterns have formed. You mentioned like it's tough, like you form these new patterns, these new experiences. Like early on, there was a spike and that kind of fades. And now what do we do?
It's tough. I mean, I think particularly in, I'll say, just kind of denominational churches, right? For a long time, I think we've kind of held on to the sacredness of the Sunday morning gathering. And we've said, like, this is central to everything we do. And I am a part of this, right? I appreciate and value Sunday morning worship. I always encourage people to be a part of Sunday morning worship, right? I just think it's so valuable to come together as a community and experience this communal thing that we do. Because you know, one of the things that we've talked about on the podcast before, right? You know, there are Sundays where I don't feel it, right? Where I don't want to sing God's praise. I don't want to read the psalm. I don't want to experience God's love. But other people in the community do that on my behalf. And because I'm there, as a community, we are able to experience those things. And that is valuable. But I also think that we're seeing now that we can experience many of those things without coming into the building, right? And that, you know, we have I have conversations with families who will say, like, I'm worshiping more intentionally with my kids than I ever have before because we're actually able to be together. I'm not constantly trying to shush them and keep them quiet. I'm not worried about what other people are saying or thinking about how I can't control my children. I'm not trying to get them off to Sunday school at the right time or here or fighting about clothes on Sunday morning. Like, we're waking up when we're all ready. We watch church. We're having conversation where, you know, if they need to go to the bathroom, they go to the bathroom. If they need to be a little loud, they can be a little loud. Like, they're experiencing church more fully as a family than they ever have before. And so I hear and I really value what Elise is saying about I want to get back into that habit, right, as we move towards that. But I think for a lot of families are saying, this is a better habit than we've ever had.
Yeah.
And so how do we move forward in a way that allows them to continue to experience that in a meaningful way, but also draws them into the larger community?
Yeah.
That's really the question that I think is going to be facing us now. I mean, not even in a couple months. I think that's the question we're facing now.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I kind of hope at the end of the day that we're a little bit more casual about it than we were, you know, that it's, I mean, for me, I kind of took a step away from like the church institution for about 5 years after I graduated college, because some experiences in college I've talked about on here are deeply hurt by, you know, the church. Sure. And so for me, it was important to take time to step away. I mean, I'm still worshiping, but it just was not in a church community that way. So I've always viewed faith as being able to exist outside of like the church community and the Sunday morning experience. Mm-hmm. But not everybody has experienced that before, I think. Yeah. So I'm hopeful that that's been eye opening for a lot of people, mm-hmm. that it can mm-hmm. be kind of wherever you find yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for, you know, even looking for me as a church, it's like, how much of our resources are going into a Sunday morning experience, when how much of our resources now we can say like, let's divide this up a little bit. Let's spread out, because this is not, we're not putting all of our proverbial eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's just like, because if that's what you're doing and you're getting a quarter of the people you were getting when before coronavirus hit, mm-hmm. well, you got to say like, something needs to change. Like, and I think there are going to be churches out there that can't or won't, and they're going to find themselves falling under or letting go of staff or closing their doors much faster mm-hmm. than they thought possible. That they thought we were in a healthy place, and then all of a sudden they weren't. Yeah. And maybe, you know, coronavirus just was like hit the, you know, poured gas on the fire that was always there mm-hmm. that they didn't really know about mm-hmm. or didn't want to address. Or maybe everything was going well, and this unforeseen thing, which we can say, we did not know it was coming. You know, we did not know really that this was going to happen, even when we were experiencing it.
Yeah.
You know, even in March, we did not really know the ramifications mm-hmm. of what coronavirus to our world were going to be. But here we are, you know, like, and we can no longer really say, well, when it goes away, things will go back to normal. And in many areas of our life, it might. You know, maybe you'll go to Kroger without a mask on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, maybe you'll go watch a movie which you haven't seen in many months, you know, kind of a thing. But to say, like, our religious life will just go back to the way it was, I don't necessarily think we're there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's latching onto a hope that I'm not quite sure is going to come true for many churches out
there. In a lot of ways, it's like saying, hey, after Martin Luther posts these 95 theses and, you know, there's this massive split, well, eventually the church is going to go back to the way it was. Well, the church was forever changed.
Sure.
Yeah. I think this is a point at which the church is going to be forever changed. Yeah. It's, you know, it's going to shift dramatically how we interact with one another and how we interact with the larger church community.
Yeah. And I think here at our church, you know, we came out of the gate pretty hot. We were putting out a lot of stuff, and then we mm-hmm. kind of like, we could not keep that kind of energy up, and we kind of had to say, mm-hmm. what can we focus in on? What are the ways that we can do best to meet the needs of our community? And probably as we continue forward, we'll still continue to pivot, still continue to shift, because we, as a staff, are figuring things out. Mm-hmm. We as a community are figuring things out. And I think that the healthiest churches out there are going to be able to figure out ways to pivot to help out those in their community best at this mm-hmm. time. And I think relying on old structures or old traditions is good. I think there's value there. But to say, that's all we can do, hope you guys like it, and we hope you come back, I think that's where I think you're going to figure out, man, maybe we were really wrong on this one.
Yeah,
I think there is... I have this theory, and maybe you guys can help me sift through what's good about it and what's not, but I have this theory that if you are still feeling very connected to your congregation, that you had a much deeper connection to the congregation originally.
Probably. Right?
That if you were on the fence, if you were kind of like a once every other, you know, once every couple weeks or once a month kind of churchgoer, or even less often than that, you probably aren't seeking out regular worship. Because church, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think in a lot of circumstances, church was kind of a casual connection. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, we've got some friends there. Oh, we, you know, we like feeling good when we go. We're real, you know, like this, that, and the other. And if you find other ways to get that feeling, that kind of endorphin kick, if you will, mm-hmm. then you just go and find that new thing. And it's going to be hard to bring those people back into church, to convince them to say, no, this matters more than whatever endorphin kick you found to replace it with.
Yeah.
But what I think you're going to be left with is kind of what we hear about in Scripture, like that faithful remnant, right? Mm-hmm. That you're going to have a core who are saying, we are fully on board with whatever this congregation wants to be doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe not whatever, but we're fully on board with this congregation, with what God is doing in this place. And if we can, as a community, if we can latch onto that energy, I think that can be something that's attractive to other people. Mm-hmm. Rather than spending all of our energy trying to bring in the people who have said, I've found my endorphin kick somewhere else, if we can focus on the energy that's already here and use that to drive it forward, I think that would be a meaningful practice.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, it's not about numbers either, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so frequently you look at, like, our membership is dwindling or whatever, and there are things that go along like that with that, like, money to fund ministry and stuff like that. But I think at the end of the day, it's like you said, that energy of like, we are fully on board, we're committed, we're here, that is going to be the thing that keeps your church afloat, you know, long term, more than, you know, we gain or lose 20 members or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think, and that's part of, I think, part of the challenge, especially as a member of a church staff, like, that's stressful, you know, because things might look a lot different, and we might have to do things that I'm 41 years old, like, I didn't. What at my 41st year, 41 in my 41
my
41? First year, my 41st year to re-envision how to do ministry. Right. That's not really what I was looking forward to, you know. Like, so that could be a challenge attached to that, and that could be a difficulty there. There's also, you know, a great deal of excitement and like, how can we do best? And I think it kind of frees us up in a lot of ways to say, like, this is our core. What can we do? And instead of saying, like, you know what we really are trying to do, what most churches are doing when they think about evangelism, it's really, we're taking people who are just dissatisfied with their other church and they're now coming to our church.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not really thinking, how can we attract people who have zero or low religious affiliation?
Yeah.
We're just thinking, they just didn't like that other church.
Right.
And maybe they'll come to us.
Yeah.
You know, and so now it kind of creates this, like, well, what can we do different? How can we really address that? Different way to bring in people with zero religious affiliation to a religious organization. And since we don't have the church building on Sunday morning to point them to, which is probably a hard sell to begin with, and now becomes different. Like, we can't just say, well, we'll just invite them to church, which, if you've never been to church before, that's a tough bridge to cross.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, but now, since we're like, well, we can't invite them to church anyway.
Yeah.
Now we have new opportunities to say, like, what can we do?
Yeah. And I think this is a great place to say, like, what does the future of, like, house churches look like?
Sure.
You know, what does it look like to invite your neighbor that doesn't go to church and say, hey, come over and have a meal with us. And, you know, just be a part of this meal. And while you're having this meal, you're having a discussion about faith with your kids. And you're maybe lighting a candle or maybe sharing communion or something like that, where they are seeing these religious things and seeing how your family just lives differently, like lives in the chaos, right? Your family's not perfect, but in the chaos, you just live differently because of your faith and how that drives you. And I think that can be a really a powerful vision for what we can be leaning into, is saying evangelism becomes your daily life because it's no longer, hey, people are just going to wander into your church building.
Yeah.
Now it's you. Like, what are you doing to share Christ with your neighbors?
Yeah. I've almost like always kind of exclusively believed in that sort of like organic evangelism type thing. Like, I'm not gonna knock on your door and slip a pamphlet under because I feel icky about that. Some people love to do that, and
I'm not one of them.
Sure, okay. Like, if that's your jam, go for it.
I'm more of a knock on the window kind of guy.
Wrap that pamphlet around a brick.
Right. Sure, yeah. Mom, I've got to.
Do you know Jesus?
Yeah, but I think, you know, just like being in community with people and just sharing your life with people, I think is the best way to open that door for people.
Yeah, and I think it can be a really exciting time for the church, a really kind of refreshing of going back to kind of like an Acts-based church, what they were experiencing, the early church, more closer to that, instead of looking at what does a corporate church do, which is very, very foreign than the disciples and the early followers of Jesus would ever envision that what the church would grow into. I don't think they could ever pick out that there would be mega churches in our world, you know, like, but I think it gives us closer to maybe some of that, what was earlier going on. And there was a great deal, not only of persecution, but also a great deal of excitement and spread of this central message of Jesus loves you, cares for you, and by connection to Jesus, you experience freedom. You know, and I think that that can be really enticing for our world, but I think that they've just been maybe turned off by the corporate church. But the message is really exciting and enticing. So, and I think that it gets us maybe to Christianity can shed some of its skin that maybe is a little diseased, maybe a little dirty and gross, and emerge as something new. And I'm hopeful that this coronavirus time can be that.
Yeah.
I look forward to 2021.
Yeah.
As a podcast, as a church community, all the things that we can do. And we can say some things will fail, some podcasts will be good, some will be bad, some of the things we do at church will be
every
good,
some
things
will gold.
Be
good.
Most will be mediocre.
Yes.
We promise.
Sure. At least. That's our minimum.
At least mediocre.
Yes. But hopefully we continue to, you know, be bold and figure out this together. So, any other thoughts?
No, I'm good.
Great.
I still want banana bread.
Go to Hawaii, right?
Yeah. It seems
that's
like
why people go to Hawaii for the banana bread.
Yeah.
They come off, you put the lie on, like, all right, where's the banana bread?
Maybe our listeners have an in with Julio's banana bread on the north side
of the
island of Maui. Is that it?
Yes, because I did not get it.
Can we get that shipped? Does Julio's ship?
Yes, in fact. In fact, they do.
I bet that's pretty pricey.
Right, you've looked. You've looked. How much does it cost to ship banana bread to Houston, Texas?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Liar.
Recall.
All right. She's pleading the fifth on this one. That's fine. All right. So, hey, if you liked this episode or any of our other episodes, we would love if you helped start the new year with this great resolution of sharing a podcast. Start the new year with the resolution of sharing a podcast with a friend. You can share Beyond Sunday at www.beyondsundaypodcast.com. And, of course, let us know what you think of this and every episode by sending us an email, beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.